rocks and further out. Right? Backhaul some material, especially for scientific purposes. But as far as like commercial utility of the stuff that you bring back from the moon, it will. That could be because of maybe there's some advanced manufacturing process that's easier on the moon. For instance, you know what I was talking about, the vacuum on the moon is extraordinary. So you could, you know, like if you think about crystal growth, if you want to grow really phenomenal crystals of silicon, you do a Tchaikovsky growth, which means you got a big, nice vacuum, you got a big melt pool of silicon, you drop a little crystal in and you pull it out.
So that grew them in L.A. Early days of the 70s.
Oh, sorry, yeah. So, I mean, you can do. There's no reason that you couldn't have that same sort of process on the moon as well. But now you don't even need to build anything to contain your vacuum or any of that. You just do it right out in the open.
So if they refine the estimates of water in the dark areas, is
it sufficient?
It's
really hard to get those things out. That's like one of the highest priority things for us next to work on.
Okay, it's dark.
So 5%, that quantity, it's so interesting that it comes at 5% from L-Cross, right? Because 5% is about the scale where it's, you know, you're on the bottom part of that curve where you're not expending an extraordinary amount of energy in heating up the regolith to get the ice out. You're actually getting more of the ice out directly. So that 5% number from L-Cross also had big error bars on it. And it was a single location, right? So, and it wasn't like, you know, evenly, it was, you know, just a big plume of ejector, right? So the ground truth measurements are sort of the next stage that we need to do. We can get that from, you know, sample return of the of a cryogenic sample from within those permanently shadowed regions. We can do it with low flying neutrons. One of the interesting things is that, you know, because there's no atmosphere, you can fly quite low. And actually, you can get you can do a neutron prospecting mission just with really, really low altitude neutrons to get down to the scale where you can get a little bit better idea on exactly where to go, and then you go with another rover like Viper's doing. So Viper is the first in, you know, actually going to be ground truth where it'll drill down and be taking samples, but it's not going into the deepest PSRs. It's going into Nobile, and it's going kind of dipping its toes and coming back out because it's a solar-powered rover. When it gets cold and you have no solar power, then it can only go for so long. So it's got kind of a short traverse. It's got a very strong set of constraints where it needs line of sight to Earth. When it doesn't have line of sight to Earth, it has to go to a safe zone where generally it will have power. It's a very, very complicated mission because it's batteries and solar panels.
Right.
So
why do you say that a man couldn't go into that crater?
It's
50 degrees, but there's no wind.
There's
that just three more layers of whatever?
You are absolutely right on this.
You
so it's not that you couldn't step in and then come back out. It's more that once you're in there, you are, you know, purely radiated, right? And you're basically in a sink, in a thermal sink that's just sucking it all out the time. So you could, with a good enough, you know, astronaut suit, like if you got a good enough spacesuit and all that,
if that's true, then any like total shade or the entire dark side or facing away from the sun and Earth.
Surviving that night is really critical anywhere you go. The astronauts that are going to go for 30 days, eventually, they're not going to be in the dark at all. And in fact, the Apollo, that limited how long and where, you know, we went to the equator, we were there for, you know, just the lunar day, and then we were off. You're absolutely right. Once the sun goes down, those shadows get cold very, very quickly. And, I mean, it's sort of a twofold thing. You know, if you can isolate yourself from that kind of environment, then you're fine. Right? If you can keep yourself warm and enough insulation, then you've got...
I don't see how we're going to be mining the water and everything all robotically. That would be just a killer.
I mean, we can do a lot of robotic operations.
And even if you're running lights and everything, you're creating some heat.
You're creating your own heat.
You know?
And I mean, that could be a way to get around it, too.
Yeah, like, you know, that's...
I honestly think the first way you're going to do any sort of mining is just straight out of the regolith. Wherever you land, it's about 40% oxygen by weight. That oxygen is about 80% of the rocket fuel.
40%?
Yeah. Wherever you land, you're standing on oxygen right now. That's all.
Yeah, sure. I know, but it's hard to get out.
It's hard to like kind of remember.
It's like you have to melt it. You have to melt it, electrolyze it,
or you do a carbon thermal reaction, or you do. There's some other sort of ways that you can get it out. I only had time to talk about one. You can spend an entire week talking about oxygen extraction alone. Right, but you can get it out. exactly how we do it.
Beyond oxygen, yeah. So what are our structural materials that we're going for?
That's a great question. So there are a few different ways that you can take this. There are structural materials. You can build those straight out of the ceramics that you would build just out of those constituents without even having to split the oxygen apart. You can use those and melt them and make, you know, little glassy type rods.
So non-ductile.
Yeah, non-ductile. But So now if you want to do ductile stuff, if you wanted to make a long range, you know, transmission cable, you can take the aluminum out, for instance. Aluminum's not a great, not the best conductor,
sure.
But it works, and if it's there, it's easy. Right? So that would be, if I think about one of the first functional materials that you would want to extract from the regolith, aluminum's probably the first one to get to.
Okay.
There are people who are proposing using the silicon that's in there for lunar-sourced photovoltaics. Okay, that's harder, but it's not impossible. And in fact, we know more about purifying silicon than just about any other thing on Earth, right? We know a lot about it, and we'll probably try to do it on the moon, too, just because it's, you know, something that we know and we care a lot about. But yeah, aluminum makes sense. You can also build big rec tennis from that if you wanted to do all sorts of other stuff.
So I guess from the Apollo missions, from what they brought back, that's our knowledge base of what we have of what regolith is consistent.
Not just because
where were those little pebbles all from? The regolith, that real assorted stuff.
Right. So I'll answer these questions in order. So even when you're flying a neutron spectrometer, you're getting not just a signature of water, but you're getting all sorts of other resonances, right?
Okay.
So from that emission spectra, you can do some detective work and figure out what your composition was.
Okay.
The maps are broad and ugly. You know, the resolution is pretty low for where these things are, but that's how we know with the thorium.
That's what she was pointing out, that right side, light side of the moon
has all this, or maybe something different. Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's how we know where all this is, various spectroscopies that are all remote sensing things.
Okay, gotcha.
And then the pebbles come from just the fact that, you know, we have all these ejecta that are all different sizes, right? So anytime there's an impact, there's an assortment of materials that are produced. You get sort of a nice particle distribution of all those different sizes.
No, I mean, but were those from Apollo?
The ones she showed, I think they were Apollo 1 samples. Yeah, yeah.
We got
a few tons of that stuff, right? So we still have plenty of it around,
right.
Although, you know, it is limited in its... one of the problems with a lot of the samples is that it is very hard to maintain fidelity of the environment that it experienced on the moon, right? Like I said, the vacuum there is better than the vacuum in LEO. So you're not,
LEO's
low Earth orbit.
Oh,
sorry.
Okay.
So even if you're at ISS, the International Space Station,
I recognize it when I see it.
Yeah, the vacuum up there is not as strong as the vacuum on the moon. And the moon's also it has this cycle of bombardment from the solar wind, right? So it's constantly being bombarded by protons, right? So this is a reducing environment. It's very strong vacuum. The surfaces are perfectly cleaved. Those are very hard things to do with good fidelity on Earth. Making those simulants is a really, really hard task.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. And they matter, right? Like, even if, when I was talking about the molten regolith thing, let's say you had a melt that was more silicon than it was iron. Molten silicon actually is lighter than most of molten regolith. So instead of going to the bottom and being tapped off like the steel I was showing, the silicon would then float to the top and ruin your reaction. Right, so even understanding your composition as it goes into that is pretty tricky. You can extract it all out, but how you design your technology really depends on your knowledge of that environment and that chemical composition. I mean, it could just be as simple as you have a tap on the bottom and a tap on the top.
Right.
But if you go up there and you'd only made your tap on the bottom, your machine is dead. So getting up there and testing this stuff out is where you're going to learn how to do it right. We're going to get so many things wrong.
Why are they worried about the gravity of the moon?
Yeah, yeah.
For the bubbles to release when the bubbles release fine in orbit in vacuum
do care about it in microgravity. So electrolysis and microgravity is not trivial either. People are studying that, and it's not. We did it.
Right.
We have not done it with really heavy viscosity materials. Really high viscosity materials like the lunar regolith would be. This is doing electrolysis on lava. Right? So that's a hard thing to do. Yeah, we can understand it through comparison to water, right, and build our models and do our verification and validation on water that we understand pretty well. We've done electrolysis. That's an easy system to manage and model. Doing it on lava is hard. We do it terrestrially. I mean, that is how steel production
can seems like that. You know, 5 years in the future, it doesn't seem like that's going
to
be
Oh, it's not 5 years.
Happening.
I'm talking 10 to 20 years is when that stuff
happens. I mean, 5 years after we start
landing and building.
Is this Boeing thing really functional? I mean,
SLS,
you
know, it's already back.
$93 billion for three launches. Are you kidding me? That
it's
should pay for you know, a station there until the end of the decade. That's like just incredible.
It's very expensive, and I think it's that's I
just thought something happened.
But if you look at how much each one of the Eclipse landers costs, those are very cheap. Comparatively, those are incredibly cheap, and that's the model where if you move to NASA funding commercial to do these things, it is so much cheaper. And commercial, not just like Boeing building the rocket for you. That's not the commercial that we're talking about. There are 14 different Eclipse providers, five of whom are manifested already to go to the moon. That is a real competitive environment.
Yeah, I mean, it's good with Musk losing his mind on Twitter, you know, but still, I just think Boeing had some kind of total mental breakdown with
it's
the Max.
It's the quality management system of the U.S. government.
It took like a year and a half.
If you're dealing with safety and QA
over
my shoulder at NASA Goddard,
yep.
making sure, you know, it's the risk adverse
this
that
is a
the
huge
private
problem.
Sector doesn't have.
They can now. If NASA fails, it is a huge mark on their name, and NASA's most valuable thing is their name, unquestionably. When things go wrong for NASA, it is a big deal, a big
it's
problem.
Congressional
scrutiny.
Paycheck.
Yes, exactly right. So
they hold that over their head.
Yep, and you know it's. In some ways, I can understand it. If you're dealing with human life,
of course,
you
don't. That's area.
Right.
But I don't. I don't.